If you play sports games in 2014, you need Operation Sports. Whether you're knee-deep in an online league, building your offline player career, living the ultimate team life, or simply enjoying one-off games against your friends, Operation Sports will help you get everything possible out of your favorite sports game. The legendary forums at Operation Sports go deep on every topic imaginable, for not just the latest games on the newest platforms, but also some of your favorite ones from years past. You name it, they've got it. Gameplay tips, roster analysis, sliders, critical analysis, wish lists, and terrific places to meet other like-minded sports gamers to form game-specific leagues and communities. Madden, NBA 2K, UFC, MLB The Show, NHL, NCAA, NBA Live, WWE, Forza, Gran Turismo, and more. Of course, that's not all. Operation Sports keeps you up to date with the latest news from around the sports game world, along with in-depth reviews, previews, press releases, and opinion. Each community member can also create their own arena where you, too, can blog about anything sports or sports game related to your heart's content. Operation Sports also produces great audio content, including the Dual Threat podcast, as well as the Press Row podcast, the definitive sports game show. 2014 is going to be another groundbreaking year for sports game. Be sure to make Operation Sports the center of it all. Operation Sports, dedicated to sports game.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham.
All right, we are back. It is the Press Row Podcast for your Friday, July 4th. The 4th of July here in the United States. Well, actually, it's the 4th of July everywhere. We just happen to care about it here in the United States. Happy 4th of July, everybody. Hi, I'm Rich Grisham. Thanks, as always, for listening. And we have the whole team, the entire starting lineup is here. I'm very excited. We're going to have a lot of fun this evening. So let's get right to it, shall we? Moving from left to right on your radio. Up first, we have a man who, as a new homeowner, has been reduced to looking for burned-out lights so that he can replace them with LED bulbs from Pasta Padre, Mr. Brian Weedeye. Brian, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I tweeted about that today. Well, it won't be today when you're listening to this, but yeah, it was, you know, it's kind of funny now what gets me excited on a day-to-day basis, and now it's, oh, you know, that light bulb is burnt out. Now I can go switch it out to these LED bulbs, and then I'll never have to switch them again. It's, you know, yeah, it's kind of pathetic, but that's that's what, you know, I have to look forward to now every day, that kind of stuff.
Up next, we have a woman whose dominance of the Press Row Madden League is Exhibit A for the need to segregate esports leagues between men and women because she would kick every guy's ass. From U.S. Gamer, is Kat Bailey. Kat Bailey, welcome to the show.
We have the entire lineup here. I'm also the one hitting cleanup. You don't want to mess with me. I'll put the ball in the stands or something. I don't know. This whole esports segregation thing is an interesting story, and I don't think it's been reported very well, but it's certainly something that's worth discussing on another podcast entirely.
Agreed. Of course, most of us never even heard of this fake esports league until this whole thing came about anyway.
That's
but anyway.
Because it's July 4th and we're in America and that sports league is not in America. So screw them.
Good point. All right. Up next, we have the new president of the Pau Gasol fan club, the executive editor of Operation Sports, Mr. Chris Sanner. Chris, welcome to the show.
You know, Rich, by the time this comes out, it's going to have come out. Pau Gasol is going somewhere completely different. I hope you know that, right? So I probably won't be president of the Pau Gasol fan club because as an Oklahoma City Thunder fan, an Oklahoma native, there's no doubt in my mind this franchise has done everything in its possible way to not make any major moves thus far and just hope guys develop. So hopefully they do because he is would be a missing link for the franchise.
Up next, we have a man who has spawned an entire cottage industry of capturing lighthearted moments during pauses in MLB The Show. From Polygon, Mr. Owen Good. Owen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rich. I'm glad to be here. And before we get started, I'd like to apologize to the listeners for missing the last podcast episode. I screwed up the recording date on my calendar, and then I was like nose deep in either a dungeon in Skyrim or my... and didn't hear Rich frantically dialing me. So not a good look. And I apologize for handling that poorly, and I promise that I will be with us from here on out. But yes, I have. You really have no idea what commitment you have to, you know, the silly crap you write about when you're watching a video game that is not being played for 45 minutes, because it's really how long you have to wait, you know, to see all of these crazy cutscenes. And yeah, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, this stuff's been in there since MLB 06, and I'm sure that it has. But, you know, I've got to – this is all for something that I'm writing about tomorrow. Excuse me, yesterday when this is published. But, you know, you have to confirm that this stuff either is in the game or it's not. And then there's weird details within it that I won't get into now that required me to rewatch it just to see if, you know, it's always the same people involved. Anyway, yes. There's an umpire who can show Yasiel Puig how to pimp a home run, which is one of the most delightfully ironic juxtapositions I've ever seen.
I love that. And as soon as I can stop quickly playing my games as fast as possible, because I'm terrified the online franchise connection is going to time out, one of these days I'm just going to play a game just to see all that. Up next, the only man in my Twitter timeline who very astutely drew a direct analogy between Tim Howard and Henrik Lundqvist. From Polygon, Mr. Sumit Sarkar. Sumit, welcome to the show.
I thought that analogy would have been pretty obvious to anyone who'd watched any Rangers games in the playoffs this year and any World Cup games featuring Team USA. I mean, both of them are world-class, incredible goalkeepers who got little to no support from the rest of their team, whether that was with, you know, offense in terms of scoring goals, or with defense in terms of preventing an onslaught of shots. I mean, yeah, Tim Howard, 16 saves, World Cup record, or most in 50 years since they've started tracking that stat, but he shouldn't have had to make that many saves, right? I think Lundqvist in the Rangers Game 5 loss in the Stanley Cup Final had like 39, 40 saves, or maybe that was Game 4, you know. Come on. You got to step it up on D there.
And as I've mentioned many times on this show and others, Tim Howard is the reason I became an Everton supporter, and he is one of the best reasons to watch Everton in the Premier League. And
also a New Jersey native as well.
That's right. And just a heck of a good guy. And up next, we have a man who is forever haunted by the fact that he was not chosen for Team USA simply because he wasn't born in Germany. From That Sports Gamer, Mr. TJ Lowerman. TJ, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rich. So happy to be here. Actually, Tim Howard's first pro team, the New Jersey Admirals, played about 15 minutes from where I live. Actually, probably like 10 minutes. If I hop on the highway, maybe 5.
Nice.
But yeah, we should get more Germans to play for Team USA. That works out well for us.
It's well, awesome. Could have worked out a little better. But that's also a story for another day. All right. So, hey, it is early July. And early July for many, many, many years has meant one thing to people who love sports video games. And that is NCAA football. And for the first time in many years, I don't even know. I'm sure somebody on the panel does know. We will not have an NCAA football game for reasons we have discussed many, many times on the show. So we're not really going to get into a whole lot about the litigation, although we will talk a little bit about it because there's been some developments. But before we get into that, I just want to kind of go around the panel and chat a little bit about what this means to each of our individual panelists and also kind of what it means in the bigger picture. And it's funny, I was thinking about this today. For many years, whenever NCAA football came out, that was my first real indicator how Alabama was going to be. You know, what kind of quarterback they were going to have, what kind of receivers, what kind of running back. Because I'm one of those guys, I think I've talked about it quite a bit. I'm focused 95% on the games. Like, I don't care about the drafts in any league. To me, that's the most boring thing in the world. I don't care about training camp. I don't care about preseason games. Get me to the regular season games. Like, I'm all about the games, nothing else. And so I never would read, you know, the preseason magazines or anything like that. But when I got my hands on NCAA, the first thing I would do every year was just hop in, start a new dynasty with Alabama, and just start playing the games and get a feel for the team. And that's like that's one of the things that I will definitely miss. So let's go around the table. We'll start with you, Chris Sander. We know you're a big NCAA football guy. What does it mean to you personally right now that no NCAA football game is coming out this year?
It just means probably my favorite time of the sports gaming calendar is not coming this year. NCAA always kicked off the fall season where we had all the AAA releases, you know, every month through October and even into November if you count WWE, were, you know, they're just released. I mean, there's a release every month starting in July. Now I guess for some reason I've got July really largely to prepare for the bigger games, for the big AAA games. But as a guy in the heart of college football country, you know, in the South and Big 12 country and in SEC country, et cetera, I just, you know, it's a game that people around here would line up at midnight for. So, you know, I went to a lot of those releases. Madden's nowhere near as big around here as NCAA was, and it's a big loss for me personally. Just it really did impact my passion for the genre for a bit, knowing that it was gone. But once you stand back and look at the story and see where things are going, there's some stuff to be hopeful about, and I'm sure we'll get into that here in just a second.
Cap Bailey, you're a Golden Gopher. You have been played in various NCAA football leagues that we've been in. What's it mean to you?
Not as much as it does to other people, because I've never been a big college person, because frankly the Golden Gophers don't have a great college football legacy. But I've always admired the talent and the hard work that the team has put into that game. And while I prefer Madden in some ways, I definitely preferred NCAA football in others. And I always found that it's superstar mode and it's GM mode. Their names are escaping me at the moment, so you'll have to forgive me. We're a lot better than what you would find on Madden. I found that it did a much better job of making me feel like I was in the shoes of a college athlete working my way through building up my character. I loved the fact that you could put together an entire high school league complete with custom logos and everything.
Yeah.
That I could recreate freaking Burnsville High School in the game. I loved that level of customization. And in some ways the presentation was a lot better, especially on the field. It did a better job of capturing those big games where it was LSU versus Alabama,
yeah,
in Alabama, and your controller's shaking and people are going crazy. I remember like playing as the crappy Golden Gophers, who have just been terrible for years and years, practically unusable. I'd be doing well, and then I'd go into the big house and it felt like the entire place was pressing down upon me and everything was moving so much faster than my poor guys. And that's just not an experience that you can really get in Madden, and it makes me a little bit sad. So while I am not as attached to the series as some other people, I think it's a definite loss, and I would have liked to have seen what they could have done with the next generation.
TJ Larriman, you've run multiple NCAA dynasties. You've played a lot of NCAA football. What's it mean to you and the guys that you play NCAA football with?
Yeah, it's pretty sad, because while I love the Press Row Madden League and our Dodd Scientific's Baseball League, the NCAA league I ran was kind of my favorite one that I had. You know, it's something we've learned playing in the Madden franchise is that if you don't have a ton of teams, or a ton of humans, it's kind of better. Just because,
yes,
there's more interaction, and
yes,
it's not everybody trying to fight with everybody every game. So I really liked that when we were doing the franchise. I'm still seeing emails because the franchise continues, even though I've backed out without my Xbox Live Gold subscription, which has made me start thinking maybe I should get my Xbox Live Gold back and get back into that league for a little bit. But yeah, I've been playing that game for the better part of a decade, and it's kind of sad to see it gone now. The only thing that was bad about the game was the Road to Glory stuff started fading the last couple of years. I miss the days of having to take the tests in school and balance your studies with your going out and partying and all that stuff. But it's a shame. Hopefully we get it back in the not too distant future.
Brian Weedow, you have been covering NCAA and all of its various legal situations for a while, but just from a playing standpoint, you know, as a fan of sports video games, what does it mean to you to have no NCAA for the first time in a generation?
Well, yeah, it doesn't sting as much as you might think just because we've known for 10 months. If this had been yanked away from us at the last minute, I think that would have hurt a lot more. But, you know, we now have these big gaps in the sports game release schedule and where we go several months with nothing. And NCAA was always the one that kind of got you jump-started on the remainder of the year when all the big games were going to start coming out, and it let you kind of have an idea of how Madden was going to play. And, you know, I was always into the online dynasty too. That was really what got me started back on playing online, is not necessarily playing against people all the time, but being a part of that social connection. You know, and if anything, of the two football games, NCAA was kind of the one that innovated more, and it kind of pushed Madden a little bit in a sense, because it was almost as though EA felt they could experiment a little bit with it more. So I think we lose a little bit of that sense of a playground for them to try new things, and because they have to be very careful with Madden. So I think it affects Madden too, in a sense. It's a bummer to lose out on it though, because you just look back and you say, you know, some of my favorite games from the last generation and prior were college football games. And it's ironic because a lot of the issue is with player likenesses and names and stuff. And the main reason why I think I liked college games more than pro games for many years was because I didn't care about the names. Like, I used to play differently.
Yes.
Where if I have a star player on my team in Madden, you know, I like, okay, I'm going to try to force the ball to him or try to get the stats to match up. But in college, I didn't know everybody. I didn't know most of the people, how good they were or anything. So I just played to strengths and see how it worked out. And I used to enjoy NCAA football more than Madden for a long stretch of time because of that, just because I thought I played more naturally with that game. So it's just kind of a bummer to lose out on that. And then also, you know, the effect it has on Madden and other sports games, just being another one lost in recent years here as we start to thin out the sports games that are available.
Sumit Sarkar, you are not a college football fan, as you have discussed before. Does this strike you at all, or is it really just because of the kind of games that you play? Is this a sort of a non-event?
You know, I would say it's a... I mean, it's calling it a non-event seems hurtful. It might hurt the feelings of people who love NCAA football. I mean, it will not affect me personally in the sense that NCAA football was not a game that I spent, you know, any serious amount of time with ever. But, you know, I certainly do lament its disappearance, and, you know, for more than just the idea that, you know, college football fans won't have a game. I mean, it's what Brian pointed out, you know, which is the idea of, you know, EA Tiburon being able to sort of ping pong back and forth between the two games and the features that they would implement in them. I mean, you know, I had that museum exhibit I mentioned. You know, one of the games we focused on was Madden NFL 99, which was that one marked the debut of franchise mode. But actually, the sort of genesis of that was Dynasty Mode, which appeared the year prior in NCAA football.
Right.
In 1997. So, you know, I think in a lot of cases you've had that. Certainly, I think in more recent years, Madden maybe got features first because the game came out a month later and, you know, they were able to make decisions on that stuff later. You know, certainly Madden was the first one to have the Infinity Engine. And then, you know, they brought that to NCAA, I think, 14 for the first time. I think that was it. But yeah, you know, it's obviously a loss there. Certainly, it was a loss for Tiburon in the sense that they had to lay off a bunch of employees when they, you know, lost that that franchise. I think I am personally sort of more curious about, I guess, the overall effects of the lawsuit and all the stuff that's surrounding the end of the game. But, yeah, I am sad to see it go.
All right, so Owen Good, you, I know college football has a particularly special place in your heart. Not only have you talked about many experiences playing it, but you also have even spent a little time working with, like collecting sound, in a couple of games that you've written about as well. So what does it mean to you to have no NCAA football game this year for the first time in a really long time?
Yeah, actually, it's been since I believe the College Football USA nameplate was on there for 2 years, and then it became an NCAA nameplate in 1997. And of course, they did that, I was told, because they wanted to get the NCAA March Madness license for their basketball game. It's been since 1997, and I have a lot of fond memories of this. To Brian's point about not knowing people on the roster and then discovering them. I mean, I think that's been one of the most enduring, appealing things about this. And I know that, back in the old days, and you had to buy a copy of Athlon sometimes, especially in the primordial internet days, to figure out, who the hell your quarterback was. But I didn't know or care who Barry Lunny was at Arkansas until I took him to the Heisman Trophy in College Football USA 96. And that was, that was a game I poured hours into. It got me through a really tough time right out of college. And then you fast forward to last year when I'm in the dynasty, and I've gone through the coaching carousel, but I've started myself out and, deliberately, I have to be a coordinator at a 2-star school. And, I learned what a weapon Marques Wilson is at Washington State, and it's the kind of thing where you look at them, or you look at everybody always had the fantasies of taking a nowhere team or a perennial loser like Kansas or Indiana to the Orange or the Rose Bowl. But you actually do discover, like, hey, there are guys on this team that are pretty good, and you learn something about them. And I will miss that. Even if the rosters turn over every 4 years as they do in a dynasty, which would sort of seem to make this kind of thing bulletproof, or future-proof anyway, there is a fatal flaw within this. And that's because we're going to have the 4-team playoff this winter, and that is in no way, replicated at all in any form, that has a shared context in NCAA football 14. And that's a shame. I would have thought that otherwise, had the postseason remained the same, and I'm not saying it should have remained the same just to preserve a video game, but had it remained the same, I thought this could have been a series that could have survived its hiatus, its hibernation that we're hoping for. Who knows if they ever will resurrect it? It would have to be under a completely different business model for the NCAA. But it could possibly even last longer than Tiger Woods PGA Tour 14 has in, the interregnum we're seeing here as it transits to the next generation console. NCAA 14, I'm told, is still selling for like $35 new at GameStop, and people are still willing to buy it. But when they get to the end of their season and they're still playing in the old crappy BCS structure, the unfair BCS structure, and it's only moderately more fair, it's a glass of cold water to the face. And there's nothing in as sports video games get more sophisticated, there's nothing that draws you out of immersion more than seeing a school under a fake name, as probably was going to happen this year, seeing a conference under a fake name, as probably was going to happen this year, and actually did happen in College Football USA 96, the game I loved so much. But it also had the bowl games, and its postseason looked exactly like the one I played in 1995, and this one, NCAA Football 14, looks like 2013's postseason.
Yeah. And it's funny, in the old Bill Walsh college football games, which I loved on the Genesis, you didn't have a lot of the official names. You had, College Station, was like one of the names of the school. So there was a lot of like locales and things like that, which was, at the time particularly charming, I thought. Cat Bailey, you have some additional thoughts on this.
Oh, it's funny to hear Owen talk about how this game can go, will eventually be obsolete, or will be obsolete next year, because in some ways, they were really forward thinking about that sort of thing, knowing that college football was changing quite a bit. The different teams, you could theoretically move Minnesota into the Pac-12 you really wanted, which is no stranger than moving Maryland into the Big Ten. So, and I always liked that you could rename the conferences or the individual conferences within the Big Ten from Legends and Leaders to whatever the heck you want, because those names are stupid and should never have been named that. And in that respect, I always felt that NCAA football was a really smartly designed game in some ways, and that other sports games can certainly take some lessons from it. I'm referring to the fact that it has a lot of smart customization options, that it would really let you kind of do whatever you wanted with the teams. But moreover, the way that it would let you approach online games, where you can put together your own custom conference and not have to worry about players being not ever playing one another. And if FIFA ever decides to make an online franchise, which I'm beginning to doubt that they ever will, that's certainly something that they can take a lesson from. Who cares if Manchester United is in the MLS? It's all fantasy.
I care that franchise should never be allowed in the MLS. Come on.
But then, Rich, then Everton might actually make it to the Champions League, and then you'd be happy, right?
I love it. Move them. Get them out.
Ship them out.
And NCAA football also had a really good approach to recruiting, especially at the end. I always found their finding a gem system to be really smart and cool.
Yes.
And
yes.
It was like, oh, I know immediately. It's like, if I scout this guy enough, I will know that he is either a stud or a bust. And that is not a thing that I see in Madden. And in that sense, recruiting, which is essentially the same as the draft, but obviously you're wooing a guy over to your team, is much more intuitive on NCAA football. And I would love to see them steal some of those ideas and move them over to Madden 15. So while NCAA football may pass from this earth, some of its better ideas can definitely live on.
TJ Lowerman, you have some additional thoughts as well.
Yeah, one of the best things about NCAA outside the game was the website that they had for it. You could do all your recruiting, all your dynasty stuff pretty much from the site. You could even like super sim your games through that, and no sports game has really come even close to trying to duplicate that. And like FIFA kind of does it a little bit for Ultimate Team, and Madden, you can kind of see the stuff that's happened in Ultimate Team. But even just the CFM website that they have now for Madden, you can just look at some stats kind of a little bit. But in NCAA, you could like export all the stats for all 120 schools, and it was pretty ridiculous.
You could even like write news stories. Like you could make the page look like ESPN.com and do all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah, you could like select pictures at the end of the games that would go to the site, and then you could write the new story about it.
Yep.
I just wish they would kind of take some of that stuff and start moving it into the other games.
Owen, good?
I've got to point out all of these things that we are pointing out are virtues and good qualities of NCAA, and I have to shake my head knowing that also every July when this series was active was a nonstop complaint fest in the comments under the reviews I wrote. And the reviews I read elsewhere about what the game didn't do this year, what the game didn't solve that was held over from last year, or what the game didn't do for Team Builder, which, you know, they had not done a lot for that, or Online Dynasty, they had not done a lot in those online features for a long time. And it's just, it's interesting to me, you know, I think it's part of gaming culture. As soon as something's taken away, you venerate it, you want it back. I think we all know which game we're thinking of here. It rhymes with Schminfl Spooky 5.
MVP 2005 does not rhyme with that at all.
And it's just...
Oh, and I like NCAA football as much as anybody, but it did definitely have its problems. I was so done with NCAA football 12 when I had the most epic game I have ever had with someone. I think it was Texas A&M versus the Gophers, and I beat them in the very last minute, and it didn't record for the online franchise, and their online architecture was just terrible all the time. It was always having drops and everything, even worse than Madden, and they just never addressed that crap. And that is a legitimate complaint.
It is a legitimate complaint, but I do think that we have to acknowledge that there's some nostalgic quality to the praise that we're heaping upon NCAA football here, because when that thing was active, I mean, there's a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of feedback, and they heard it every day down in Tiburon too. You know, that they had mailed it in, you know, for yet another year. And I think what we're really seeing here, frankly, is what we would have seen in 2005 if Sega had somehow convinced the NFL to give it the license and Madden died. And God knows what kind of peons we'd be writing to Madden now. So I hate to be a grump, but I want to keep it in perspective because, you know, there are people out there who write love notes to the St. Louis Browns, an absolutely terrible franchise, but they're loved because they don't exist anymore. So
speaking of that, I think it's probably a good transition to, okay, we know what it means to us this year, but what does it mean to EA Sports? What does it mean to Tiburon? What does it mean to Madden? I mean, could this, you know, over the course of time, perhaps alter the structure of the releases? What does it mean to the team working on the game? What does it mean to the financials of EA Sports? What does it mean to the overall makeup of Tiburon? There's a lot of EA Sports stuff in this. And Brian Weedy, what do you think the overall impact is on EA and the studio and potentially other EA Sports franchises that get released during a very compressed calendar right now?
Yeah. Owen has, in the past, he's brought up, you know, the issues at Tiburon and how they keep losing their titles. There's not a whole lot left going on there. You bring back golf next year and everything. But, you know, it's a rough situation because, again, I think you played kind of NCAA and Madden played off of each other a little bit with those development teams. Now all the resources shift to Madden instead, and they continue – for the most part, to play it safe, as they're the only title on the market, and you lose a little bit, I think, of that friendly competition too between the two games, and so it's a difficult situation for EA because again, you're compressing more. They need to get more than out of their other titles, and that's why Ultimate Team takes on greater prominence in those games too. It's a tough situation to have so much it's just disappearing on them and on us.
Sumit, you have spent some time reporting on, you know, EA and Tiburon. What do you think this means to the big picture of EA? I mean, was NCAA football a big enough gun in their arsenal to really cause a dent, or, you know, business wise, do you think this is not that big of a deal?
Yeah, so I think if you look at NCAA football in the context of all of EA's other franchises, I certainly was very surprised, and I think we all were, when they announced that they were going to do Ultimate Team for NCAA 14 for the first time, because it was like, oh, how is that going to work with college players and pro players and this and that? Because that, it's becoming increasingly clear, is going to be the bedrock of EA's sports business going forward. You know, this year they're doing those ultimate editions of all their sports games, Madden, FIFA, NHL, which, you know, for $10 extra you get a bunch of, I mean, it's not just Ultimate Team content, but it's basically focused on that. I mean, you know, for Madden they're touting like, oh, you're getting $40 worth of Ultimate Team content for an extra $10. You know, I don't know how NCAA 14 Ultimate Team did for them. Certainly Madden and FIFA are immensely lucrative for them. You know, upwards of, I mean, they're you know, in the hundreds of millions of dollars for revenue from just Ultimate Team. I don't know that NCAA itself was, I don't think it was a money loser, but, I don't think it was hugely profitable for them either. You know, the licensing fee they paid to the NCAA itself wasn't a whole lot. I think it was like $500,000, but obviously, you know, much larger costs for the actual schools and uniforms and colors and mascots and all that stuff. So to EA's bottom line, I don't know that not having NCAA makes a huge difference, but I think where it hurts more is, as Brian was saying, and as Owen has been saying, you know, sort of to Tiburon itself individually is where they sort of most acutely feel the loss of that franchise.
So let's talk about the future. Chris Sanner, what is on the horizon in the short or the long term with not just NCAA football, but with college sports video games in any way, shape, or manner? I know that you have spent a lot of time, as has Brian and has Owen, you know, reading and following the legal proceedings and talking to people about it. So where is this going to go over the next 18 to 36 months and perhaps even further out than that?
Well, we're going to find out a lot about the future of college sports in general in August when we have the NCAA general meeting. And what's coming up at that meeting is the Power Five conferences, the Big Ten, the Big 12, the SEC, the Pac-12. I just named them off so quick, I don't know the fifth one I've left out. ACC, is that the one I left out? Owen,
I don't know if that qualifies as a Power Conference.
You know what? I'm not even going to complain because we have done nothing to deserve attention in football.
Well, you do have the national champion in your conference right now, so that counts for something. But
and it is Snow White and the 13 Dwarves. And but, Clemson, okay, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, this general meeting, what the Power Five conferences are wanting, and this is a very complex topic in and of itself, but they're wanting more autonomy. And that means a lot of things, but basically they want to be able to make their own rules. They don't want their own division per se, because that would probably be going too far, but they do want their own rules to where they can do things with student athletes, such as possibly give them a slice of the pie, the revenue pie. NCAA football, the video game, or in any video game, is not coming back without substantive legal structure changes to the NCAA right now. The lawsuit with Ed O'Bannon guarantees that. I mean, no matter the result of that lawsuit, there has to be legal changes. And if you want a game, you probably have to root for O'Bannon or these Power Five conferences to get their way. Now, there's a couple of potential scenarios coming up with this. NCAA football did make $80 million a year, so it's far from a throwaway kind of title. It's definitely a nice yearly addition to the revenue stream. The licensing costs, you know, that EA would have to incur would have to make sense, but there's every bit of possibility that these Power Five conferences would have the legal structures in place by August for such an effort, a college football video game effort, to start immediately, really. I mean, it could start immediately just because of that. Now, that's obviously throwing a lot of ifs and possibilities, but the question is a game with just the Power Five conferences worth it? I mean, that's the real question. As far as the rest, it's going to take a lot more in terms of legal structure changes. It just depends on where college sports goes, because within this meeting, within this dynamic of power conferences, you have the SEC and Big 12, and to a lesser extent the ACC on one end, and you have the Pac-12 and Big 10 on the other end, which have kind of different ideas about where the future college sports goes, the latter being more of an academically focused kind of approach. You saw it with Indiana and their four-year scholarships, the Big 10 coming out with those statements. And the former, you know, they're more about, well, let's just put it this way, they're the ones that win the championships. So it's going to be, and that's not a shot at the Big Ten or Pac-12. That's just a nice little, okay, it is a shot. But,
it's called facts. They
yeah,
are facts.
Yeah, yeah. It's hopefully that changes this year. Or actually, I hope OU wins. But I hope those other two conferences continue to field a competitive product. But anyways, we're in a situation now where the future of college athletics is really up in the air as far as where do we go from here, because there's definitely different ideas. There's different approaches. There's different self-absorbed realities. And then you have the non-Power Five, the Conference USA, the American Athletic, you know, the MAC. Where are those conferences going to go? It's going to be interesting to see what comes out of August. That meeting in August will tell us a lot about the future, but the only way you're getting college video games at this point is you have to have direct player compensation, and the risk for litigation for schools, etc., has to be zero. Otherwise, this will never happen again. So that's going to be the real issue here, and the Edelbannon trial obviously seems to be going in the way of the O'Bannon team. So that's going to be appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court, most likely. But there's just so many different power structure, legal structure, et cetera, kind of issues that have to be worked out for this to really come in line. I do believe it will before the end of this generation. The question is, when will EA Sports or anybody else decide it's then worth it to make a college football video game? There's a lot of it depends also on how many companies are willing to leave that much money on the sidelines. NCAA obviously is a money-making franchise. NCAA football is a money-making endeavor. It generates a lot of revenue. So it's a sport that's definitely desirable, but when will somebody be willing to take on this mountain and get this going again? That's going to be the big question. The structures could exist as soon as August. It might be years down the line. But I do believe at some point in the future there will be those structures. There will be someone willing to do it, and it will happen.
Cap Bailey, your final thoughts on the NCAA situation and the lack of a game this year and potentially the future of the franchise?
I think NCAA football is dead. And while I respect Chris Sanner's point of view on it, I think that there's a larger issue than the trial, which certainly plays a part in it, but one of the big problems is that EA has effectively disbanded the NCAA team, and if I recall correctly, laid off a good chunk of them. So the infrastructure is more or less gone. Now, a team could come back and they could use the Madden 15 Infinity Engine to build a college football game, but there's a good question as to whether all the assets would be usable. How can they go about making sure that it's not completely out of date by the time it comes back? They wouldn't be quite starting over from scratch, but there would be enough issues that I would feel like EA would be concerned, feeling a little gun-shy about having another NBA Live situation, which makes me feel like they're just going to say, it's not worth it.
Interesting. All right, so moving from the death of college football to the birth of UFC, TJ Lowerman, a couple weeks ago, you were on the Press Row Hangout. You and Brian Weed, I and I had a bit of a review roundtable. I asked you at the end of the show whether you would still have and be playing the game at a week later, and you paused and sighed and said, maybe, and from your tweets and following what you've been got going on, dare I say, have you come around on UFC?
I have made a complete 210-degree turn because I've made it all the way from
How is that backwards or forwards? I can't.
Well, no, you have to, 180 is you've turned around.
Okay.
I've gone a little bit further than turning around because now I'm starting to come back the other way. After playing some online games and getting into more of the career mode stuff, I started liking the way the game felt and the flow of the games. And about maybe 2 weeks after the game came out, I was really starting to get the handle of it and really liking it. And then that's kind of where I realized that the game itself is just not that deep, and there's not many options of things to really do in the game. Like, my guy's a boxer, and I'm like 18 or 20 matches in, and I've gotten past the point where it's like, okay, I'm good. And now it's to the point where it's like, this guy, I'm just going to beat up on him for a little while, and then he'll magically kick me in the side, and then the match will be over, even though he hit me once, and I kind of blocked it, but I guess magic wins out on that one. And I've gotten to the point where I'm really tired of doing the little training things in between each match, and if you don't do those, you don't get points, so you have to do them to keep making your guy better so you can keep winning. And it just seems like there's not a ton there. I've played some online matches. That's been fun. And they have the online seasons mode, but it's just not a ton there. I mean, we talk about other games where you have the big franchise mode, the online modes, all the be a player, be a team, all that stuff. And this game's just a little lacking, but I still think it's fun to pick up and play a match every once in a while, but it's not going to be a staple of my, I'm going to play this every single day like an MLB or a Madden's going to be.
Brian Weed, I have your thoughts changed? Have you grown to like the game more, dislike the game more, or are you where you sort of were, you know, when we last spoke about this a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I haven't changed because it's still the game, you know, isn't going to change from the unrealistic nature that it is. I have found it interesting to follow TJ's path with this game because, and this isn't meant as any sort of insult or anything because there's nothing wrong with it, TJ kind of fell into that more casual crowd. We've talked about how this game was basically designed for a more casual crowd and marketed towards the more casual crowd. And so, you know, the issue with that was it's inherently a complicated game. So what you needed to do is get someone like TJ or anyone else who isn't a hardcore UFC fan necessarily to stick with it despite the controls and everything, to stick with it long enough to where they get comfortable with it and start to enjoy it, which is what TJ did. But how many people actually go through that, you know, process where for a week he hated it and keep playing? How many people keep playing a game they hate at first? So I found it interesting how TJ turned around on it, and then maybe and now he's seeing some more of the downsides of it as he gets more comfortable with it. It's just, you know, for me, it's one of those games where you play it and you say, instead of an NBA Live or something where you pick it up and you play it and you say, okay, this was never going to be a good game. I picked up UFC, and a couple friends of mine who are even more into UFC than I am picked it up, and they said, man, you know, you look at this game and you play this game and you see the potential in it. You see it could have been such a good game, but EA's design decisions were so poor that you know, it became a game that really doesn't appeal to any one crowd because of the way they you know, it's kind of unrealistic, but it's inherently complicated, and they made it more on the arcade side of things to appeal to a wider audience, but that same audience may not have the patience to get through understanding and learning the controls and all that. So no, you know, the outlook hasn't changed for me, and I don't see how it could change unless they did some kind of impossible patch that completely reversed the way they wanted this game to be.
All right, so before we take a step back and take a bigger picture look at UFC and sort of its critical reception and that, Sumit Sarkar, you've actually dabbled in a little UFC earlier today, played a little bit of it. Just give us your initial impressions, your thoughts. Are you a UFC guy? And did that, you know, if so, does that make you more interested in playing the game? Or if not, were you hoping this might perhaps even spark your interest in the sport?
Well, I'll start this off by saying that I know about as much as about UFC as I know about college football or college sports in general. So I don't follow UFC at all. I don't know. I mean, it's the same with like boxing. I don't have the stomach for it, I guess. I don't like watching two dudes or two ladies beat each other to death. So that's, you know, sort of where I'm coming from. However, I had a ton of fun playing Fight Night Round 4 when I reviewed that back in 2009 or whenever that game came out. So I thought I would, you know, come into this with an open mind, which ended up being impossible because, you know, I've now read a bunch of reviews. Obviously, the game's been out for a while. I'm only getting to it, or I was only getting into it tonight. So I think I played like three full matches, you know, one with like a light heavyweight, then, you know, that one was with John Jones, and then like a welterweight, I think, with Bruce Lee, and then heavyweight with I can't remember somebody. It's interesting to see the way the game played out. I'm playing on easy against the computer. You know, from what I understand, it's better to play other human beings in this game. That's what I've been hearing anyway. But there was definitely, you know, a marked difference in the matches, you know, in the pace, in the strikes and you know, the way the hits landed and that sort of thing. I lost the heavyweight fight and I won the other two pretty easily. But to me, the thing I noticed that that sort of cropped up most clearly was that it was what Brian was saying. It does seem very arcadey. You know, maybe this is because I'm playing it wrong. I don't know how to play the game. I don't know much about UFC, but you know, really, the computer and I were just sort of trading blows back and forth.
Oh yeah, that's the way the game is.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. No matter, you really can't fight any other way, even if you want to.
Huh. All right. Yeah. So, you know, it seemed that the computer was really, really aggressive and you know, did not block a ton. I mean, you know, I imagine they would again on normal difficulty or something like that. But you know, it did seem to be a real game of just, you know, you guys are sort of trading blows until somebody falls over. You know, occasionally there's a takedown or you know, attempts at a submission or something. But you know, sort of coming at it as a non-fan of UFC and as someone who, you know, plays a lot of sports games, I was thinking about this in comparison to something like NBA 2K. Because I went through the tutorial for UFC. It's the first thing you do in the game when you boot it up. And I also looked at the move list in the pause menu. And I was like, oh, geez, this is a fighting game in the sense of there are all these different commands. I couldn't possibly hope to, you know, get anything but the most basic things down. And really, I ended up just sort of, you know, button mashing. And that's the problem that Brian was singling out here. There is a move list, TJ. Yeah, if you go to the pause menu, maybe not in the career mode. I don't know. I didn't try the career. I just did a couple of or three exhibition matches. You know, this is the problem if you're going to try to appeal to a more casual audience with this game, which is that it's immensely complicated. The control scheme. There's so much to memorize, and just like a fighting game, you know, you really have to know what your moves, you know, what the commands do, which moves they are assigned to for, you know, whichever particular fighter you're using, and when to use them, right? Like, you gotta know, okay, I just parried this attack, I've got, you know, whatever, a half second window, I can pull off, you know, like, a roundhouse kick, but I can't pull off a flying knee, right? Like, that's the kind of knowledge that you're gonna need if you're going to succeed the way like a UFC fighter would succeed. And the control scheme is so complicated. There's so many different, you know, situations, right? Like there's stand up, there's clinch, there's, you know, ground, but there's more, more nuanced shading within that stuff that it's, I feel like it would be impossible for someone to get down unless they really knew the sport and they really learn the game. And then you look at something like NBA 2K, which that's the same thing. If you just look at the list of like what all of the right stick commands are, like the Euro step and the hop step and the hook shot in the post, you know, all that stuff. That's all really intimidating if you look at it. But the way they design NBA is that you can sort of fiddle around with the sticks. And of course, you can use the button controls, and it still works. You can still have a good time, and you can succeed. And I'm not sure that that's going to be the case with casual fans coming to UFC.
It also doesn't help that the tutorials and mini game type teaching moments are incredibly dull, and like TJ said, you get really sick of them, and it doesn't really teach you the context of situations. And then you start a career mode, which is really the only thing to do offline, and they start you in Ultimate Fighter, and for some incomprehensible reason your guy is so terrible he can barely move and can barely do anything. He has no power, no nothing. It's not the best way to introduce people, and it's not certainly not realistic to Ultimate Fighter and how the people who participate in that are actually skilled fighters, just need their potential tapped and refined. So it's not the best way to introduce people to it too. And of course you can go online and then just get into a slugfest with someone else and learn that way. But then you find yourself in situations where people are spamming. You know, there's issues with spamming various techniques. That become just wholly frustrating too. There's not a great way essentially to improve yourself in this game in a natural sense.
So, Owen Good, we have not spoken to you since UFC was released. Walk us through your thoughts on UFC, really almost the big picture. Its place as a franchise in EA Sports Arsenal, its initial reception, and just your thoughts observing what's happened with UFC since its release.
Well, I feel obligated to chime in here because I did see this pre-release, you know, at the judges event in Los Angeles before E3. And I think it's one of these things where you understand the difference between having a game explained to you by a person who participated in its creation, but when you're left to your own devices, you really see how complicated it can be. Brian Hayes, you walked me through some basic fundamentals, and I think, what is it? Left trigger is always your defense, right? The problem is...
Right trigger is the block.
Right trigger is always the defense.
But you can block high with one button and block low with another, too.
Exactly. You know, the problem is there are so many modifiers in this, and I know I sound like an old man yelling at people to get off his virtual lawn, but it's... I'm serious. My RAM fills up so quickly in that tutorial that I am reduced to, what Smit, what Brian, we're talking about, which is button spamming. And I don't button spam when I'm in a, hotel conference room with the creative director of the game explaining, step by step what to do. And I actually hung in there with him and he still choked me out, but it's just it's a complicated game that I don't know if it really can be reduced. And I really think this is the kind of thing that we get into with sports that are so complicated or require so much external knowledge that there's like an innate barrier to participation. And I think that that is reflected in the review scores. I saw a lot of guys writing reviews, and it's not to say these are not competent reviews. I do not say that. But I saw a lot of reviews who were, they were from people who were not sports gamers. And I think that sports gamers are sort of conditioned to go, all right, I'm going to get my ass kicked on this. It's going to be a control set that's completely Byzantine to me.
Yes.
But there's an obligation to me to learn it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not, I definitely want to say this because Arthur is listening to this, and he's the guy who reviewed it for us for Polygon. He's going to want to kick my ass, and I'm fortunate that he's on the West Coast. I am not saying that he didn't put in a good job learning the controls, but I think that I think sports gamers and sports reviewers are a little bit more tolerant, and UFC went up against people who, frankly, are like, no, the control system has got to make sense here. And when I ran that tutorial, I saw exactly what they were talking about. It is a damn frustrating thing. And I just, to me, that's kind of the disappointment and the tragedy, because I thought this was going to be a good game, but it may have been that it was going to be a good game because the guy who made it told me it was going to be a good game. And that's on me to not be a little bit more discerning in my appraisal. It is going to be tough for me to continue with this. I concur with the other two points, which is like you have a very aggressive opponent. He's constantly coming after you. It's hard to think on the run so much. And then here's the other thing. With these three phases that you've got and the completely different ways in which they affect your progress toward the ultimate goal of the match, which is to kick the other guy's ass, it completely screws up my mindset once I go to the clinch, once I go to the mat, once I'm taken to the mat, what I should be doing. And I'd like to ask, you guys this. Tell me what the command is on your DualShock 4 for holding a runner at first base but sending a guy to third base in extra base.
Yeah, I don't think any of us probably could.
Yeah.
Just figured it out.
Yeah.
Now, that's hold on a second.
Base running, right?
Owen, you're talking to a guy who hit into two consecutive triple plays in my online franchise league game last week.
What, in the same inning?
No.
Back-to-back innings.
Consecutive innings. That's how bad I am at that kind of stuff.
Right. And so it's and I get to the point where it's like I sort of wonder, honestly, if NBA 2K – was coming in as a new franchise, having there been 2 years of no simulation basketball game, if we might not be seeing the same scores applied to it even though it's a beautiful game. Now, NBA 2K's career mode, yes, yeah, there's a lot of depth there. There's a lot more there. But in the core, in the fundamental itself, I mean, that is a damn hard game to learn too. So I think EA Sports UFC is being made to bear a lot of the sins of where iterative sports titles have taken us in their ability to serve so much pointillistic detail.
Hey, Owen.
Yeah.
If I can jump in here. I don't know if there's a whole big issue with, of course, in these reviews, yes, but with the controls being that complicated. If you look, and this interests me because I looked back and checked, the THQ UFC games were just as complicated, essentially, but they got higher review scores, and nobody really complained about them being too complicated. And I think that's because they targeted those games at the actual UFC fans, as opposed to EA going for like the more casual crowd. But it's just interesting to me that we really didn't see a whole wave of this is too complicated, bad scores type of thing back with the UFC games from THQ or even EA's MMA game, which was, I think, more simpler.
Well,
was a simpler game, yeah.
The striking in EA Sports MMA was on the right analog stick,
yes.
And it more conformed to Fight Night, which, you know, I think that's... Frankly, that's the entry point they should have gone with here. Mm-hmm. And, that's easy for me to say as an armchair designer, and my opinion is worth the paper it's printed on. But there are so many things that I want to do with that controller that are not strategically thought out. And frankly, it was that way with THQ's game, too. It's a big trial and error game, and that is asking a lot of, as you said... You know, the casual demographic, the big, hey, I saw a pay-per-view, I might want to try this out in my living room.
Bruce Lee is in the game. Whoop-dee.
All that stuff. That's a big ask of that crowd.
Yeah.
Cat Bailey, your thoughts on UFC?
Two quick things. First of all, I'm not a UFC fan. I'm not an MMA fan. So my apologies to everybody who is listening to me. That said... I do have a passing passing familiarity with the sport, and when I was watching the trailer for UFC during E3 and they introduced Bruce Lee, I had a sinking feeling in my stomach because Bruce Lee, the character, the actor, the guy, the kung fu guy, it's so at odds with the actual UFC, at least from what I've been able to see in terms of how it is, like that I was like, something tells me that they're not targeting the hardcore fans here. This could be trouble. And sure enough, and when I say that it seems at odds with the actual UFC, I think a lot of people like to imagine that kung fu fighting would work really well in MMA, but my understanding is that there's a lot of grappling, it's a lot more technical, and there's not a lot of flash. So I always found that to be kind of a questionable decision, except to say that it was meant to be an idealized version of what maybe some people want MMA to be, which is essentially movie duels. The second thing I wanted to point out is that this is obviously their first foothold for the franchise. They're going to be new. I assume that they're going to be annual iterations from this point on. And as a foothold, it's a hell of a lot more successful than NBA Live, at least from a technical standpoint. The stuff that they can... the stuff like the controls and its arcadiness can be fixed. The point is that it looks great. I mean, the presentation's great. They can deepen it. They can layer in more systems with the foundations there. So I'm not as pessimistic as maybe some other people are about it.
Well, one quick point of clarification, Kat, is UFC is not an annual title. It will be every other year or such. So that is one key difference.
That's what I know. See, I shouldn't have even opened my mouth about this game. Shows what I know. But point is, I think that the title that comes out in a couple of years is going to be significantly better and that it will actually turn out to be a pretty good franchise.
Sumit Sarkar?
Yeah, you know, I just want to say, you know, we've obviously been talking a lot about UFC's failings. There's definitely, from my limited time with the game and from the reviews I've read, there's definitely a good amount of stuff that it does well. Obviously, it looks freaking amazing. And in addition to, like, just the visual splendor that's on display, I like what I said before, you know, I don't really have the stomach for watching real-life UFC or MMA, but I sort of felt the same, you know, as I was playing this game, in the sense of, man, when some of your hits land, I mean, it's like you feel it, you know, it really does. And I guess that's EA's tagline for the game, right? Feel the fight. But you know, I think they did a really, really good job of making the strikes feel impactful, of making, you know, everything, whether it's you know, a suplex or you know, a flying knee or a Superman punch or jumping off the cage, you know, that stuff all you know, really feels visceral, to use an overused term in the industry. And I also agree with Kat in the sense that, you know, this is a first step for EA, right? I mean, I feel like my guess is, you know, I don't know this, but or for sure, but my guess is that they sort of completely started at square one with this game compared to EA Sports MMA. Like, you know, I mean, there may be a few lines of code, but my guess, educated guess, is that obviously it's a different studio making it. You know, my guess is that this was done from scratch, certainly be, you know, not least because it's on the new consoles. And so, you know, I would think that going forward, this is a good thing to build on, but also, you know, whether or not they change the control scheme, I think another big issue that reviewers had with the game was its depth or lack thereof. And, you know, hearing a lot of people talk about the sort of shallow career mode as being a major issue for the game, I would think that is something maybe that resulted from the studio not having, you know, maybe as much development time as they wanted, in terms of, you know, oh, they had to get the game up and running and you know, make it all work. And honestly, they couldn't quite pull that off, if you've seen the amazing commented glitch video that's been going around on YouTube. But, you know, I would imagine that a lot of that other stuff that we've come to expect from sports games these days, from simulation sports games specifically, you know, hopefully would arrive, you know, in a future entry, which, you know, would be, I would imagine, you know, 18 months to 2 years off.
So, Chris Sander, the resident operation sports expert, the UFC expert, Glenn Wigmore, who made an appearance on this show last week with an extended interview talking about UFC, who was... he was pretty positive on UFC. He did a very in-depth review on Operation Sports. Have you found that the Operation Sports community opinion matches that of Glenn's, which was fairly positive? Has it been even more positive, or has it been a little bit or even more negative? What's the overall take on UFC in the Operation Sports community?
Well, as we know, Rich, the most important response to a game isn't our scores or anything. It's how the general public, you know, how people feel of a game, how they react to it, how they are, how long they're going to be willing to play it. It depends on who you ask when you ask that question. It's a very polarizing game. I said that many times to Steve over the course of our coverage. It seems like people really, really like this game, or they really, really hate this game. And I think you even saw that in reviews, where you had guys giving the game anywhere from, like, you know, 80-90% kind of scores down into 40s and 50%. I mean, it just depends on who you ask, what their level of fandom of UFC is, how willing they are to take on the control scheme, and what comes out of that. I mean, you on our poll, I mean, we usually do a poll after every major release, just ask people their first general impressions. It's a great, good, average, bad scale. I mean, just four stops, you pick one, and that's what your rating impression, so to speak, is. And UFC's response was notably lower than most other AAA titles. I mean, it was definitely well below Madden, well below NBA 2K. I think the only game that it really kind of that would be worse as a AAA title would have been NBA Live. So it definitely was very coolly received in that line. And I think the biggest thing that you see around is people, they don't like, there's one or two things they don't like. They don't like the fact that it's darn near impossible to figure out because of the controls. So you got that camp, but you have the other camp, which is the hardcore UFC fans who hate the game because there are so many problems within the core gameplay about how MMA fights are supposed to go and such. And you're barking up the wrong tree if you're asking me how that's supposed to be. I don't pay attention to the sport. I really don't care about the sport. But just in terms of the community reaction, it's been cooler than most other AAA titles. And it seems the reason for that is you have the casual fans who don't want to go in with the controls, and you have the hardcore fans who don't like the game because of the simple fact it's not simulation enough for them. So trying to please those two, I don't know if they're going to be able to do that long term.
So the Metacritic rating, which, you know, whether you like Metacritic or whether you hate Metacritic, there is no denying that it is extremely influential in how publisher executives view the quality of the game, is kind of low. It's at a 69 for the PS4 version and a 71 for the Xbox One version. How they could be so different is kind of weird, but that's fine. What does this mean to the franchise moving forward? Is this a big hit? Is this, I mean, when I say a big hit, I mean, is this a negative sort of hit to the punch to the ribs? I mean, could this potentially have significant ramifications to how the game is supported, you know, who makes it going forward? Like, what is the impact of this? Owen Good, what do you think?
I don't think EA Sports is happy with this. I don't think EA is happy with this. But I think they're in this for the long term. Now, I don't think there's anybody who's going to be building a UFC game in the near term. And I think they still can make a lot of money off of it, even despite these low critic scores. There is more growth, and it says a lot that EA, you know, that there were two licenses basically becoming available in 2012, and that was the UFC and Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball still is out there. And EA Sports said, hell no, we're going to go with mixed martial arts. There's more growth. There's a greater video game appeal because of the nature of the sport itself. I don't think this is like, you know, fire the entire creative staff, as EA Sports has done to the leadership of NBA Live repeatedly, you know, beginning with the Elite disaster and then through the aborted launch of 13. It's I think it's something that they will weather and survive, but yeah, they're tasting their own blood in their mouth here because they've been smacked pretty good, but I don't think it's the kind of thing where EA puts this on. You know, so everybody always has these dark visions that, you know, you come in at a certain Metascore and, you know, you're put on a subsistence budget and they're just playing out the string until the end of the license. I think EA will look at this and go, okay, we came in at this score and legitimately ask, how can we make it better? And it may be, how can we make it better? And you're teaching to the test, you know, for the next go around. And there are people who still find all sorts of problems with it and all that kind of thing too. But I don't think that the first offering is something that EA Sports looks at and goes, well, you know, couldn't come in a Metacritic 82. Let's wash our hands of this.
Brian Widow, your thoughts?
Yeah, Owen's right. I mean, UFC's not going anywhere, but I think they do have to obviously adjust their approach. I don't believe this hybrid kind of arcade slash sim game, which I think in their eyes worked for Fight Night, and it's the same team that made Fight Night that worked on UFC, and this is kind of their approach and their philosophy towards it. I think that has to change. And you know, you look at the Metacritics, and again, you're 15 points below the THQ games. You're 10 points below a Strikeforce branded EA MMA game that barely anyone played or bothered with. It's embarrassing, and they, I think they realize that. I'm sure Dana White is all over them about it. You know, there's no one that cares more about their brand seemingly than he does, and there's no one as about as outspoken as he is when it comes to that. So, yeah, I mean, they have to do it, and I think we'll probably see some minor adjustments in patches because they have to respond. There's no doubt about it. They can't just continue down a path that isn't working. And then we'll probably see something dramatically different with the next game. They went to the well on things like Bruce Lee, which I think in the end probably, like Kat was saying, probably hurt the image of the game a little bit even. So they just have to adjust, and they tend, you know, they're going to have time to do that as a biannual title. So it'll be interesting to see how they go about with support for this game, and then what kind of changes they make going forward.
Smith Sarkar, your thoughts on this topic?
Man, I really want to be the guy who puts a mic in front of Dana White and just lets him go. I really want to know what he thinks about, you know, telling EA to screw themselves a couple of years ago, then signing an exclusive contract with them, and this being the result, or the first result. You know, so he can't be too thrilled right now. I certainly agree with Owen, Brian. EA is not going to throw in the towel on this. They did just go out and get that, you know, exclusive license, which I'm sure they paid a pretty penny for. But I will be interested to see, you know, as Brian was saying, not just what the future holds in terms of the next game, but what the future holds in terms of this game and the support for it. Because I don't think, you know, while this is an embarrassment for EA, and, you know, this was supposed to be, you know, I remember talking to Brian Hayes few months ago, and you know, he was saying that sort of they wanted this to be one of the defining titles on the new consoles, you know, for you know, defining in the sense of showing people what these consoles were capable of, in the same way that Fight Night Round 3 did for the PS3 and Xbox 360. Obviously, you know, they've not accomplished that except in terms of the graphics, but at the same time, I don't think this reception, as lukewarm as it has been, I don't think it warrants the self-flagellation that you saw from the NBA Live 14 team. You know, I don't think you're going to see an open letter from Brian Hayes saying, "Oh, guys, you know, we know this wasn't up to snuff," right? You know, on the EA Sports UFC mm-hmm. website, and you're not going to see anything like that. At the same time, though, I would imagine, I would hope that they're gonna, at the very least, fix the glitches that we saw in that that, you know, YouTube video that's been making the rounds. That, as funny as it is, and as honest as potentially likely as it is to maybe actually get people to buy the game, if only for the curiosity. I, you know, that's got to be one of the most embarrassing things about the release for EA, but I would imagine that you know, I would hope that we would see some post-release support, if not like an open letter, you know, some kind of acknowledgement that, you know, specifically the major things that people were harping on in the reviews, the control scheme, the opacity of it, and also the tutorial stuff. You know, maybe they'll address that. Maybe that's something that can be addressed in some kind of update, as opposed to, you know, the sort of core direction of the game that Brian was talking about, which I think, you know, you're not going to be able to see changed until the next go around.
So that brings us to one of the couple tweets I want to read for tonight. This one comes from Senior NASCAR. Our friend David Benry says, "How many patches do you think the UFC game will get post-release, and will they help make the game more strategic sim? TJ Lowerman, what do you think?"
I will say two. One to try to fix stuff, and then the second one to fix the one everything they broke in the first one.
You're on to something there.
Well, I think that's probably the perfect response to that. Knight Attack 09. He says, what feature are you looking forward to most in NHL 15 on next gen? Personally, I can't wait for next gen EA SHL. Cat Bailey, what do you think about that?
There's only one answer, and that is Doc Emmerich is the announcer. Woo! Kurt. Doc Emmerich. Doc. I like the previous announcers, but God, right now I can't even think of their names. They'd
Gary
been there for
Bill
so
Clement.
Long. Yes, those guys, they were fine, but they had been around for so long that I was starting to get it, that they had become almost non-entities for me. And then, you know, a more serious answer, though I'm actually really excited for that. I'm desperately curious to see what they do with the different career modes, because NHL always had really fundamentally solid career modes that had a lot of depth to them, but I felt like the UI in particular got pretty long in the tooth, and after a while they became kind of incomprehensible. I would really like to see a smart update that kind of serves as the model for all of the other sports franchises, which have a really hard time with usability, mixing usability with depth. Actually, we were talking about NCAA football earlier. I think NCAA football did probably the best in terms of making a in-depth and interesting franchise mode and road to glory mode that at the same time was actually comprehensible, which is a real problem in sports games, in my opinion.
TJ Larriman, you're one of our founding members of our NHL leagues we've been doing for quite some time. What do you want to see, or what feature are you most looking forward to in the next gen NHL 15?
I agree with Knight Attack 09. I'm really excited to see what's going to happen with the ESHL stuff, because I really want to get back into that. I mean, playing against people is real fun, but I really miss playing the pro club style game that you can play in FIFA, and I just haven't played in NHL in a while. And now we have so many new people to play with, like Knight Attack 09.
I agree with you, TJ. EASHL has always been kind of the secret sauce of NHL, even though it doesn't get talked about nearly enough. And I'm almost certain that they're going to come in and put a lot of effort into making it great. Personally, I would love for them to go in and do an online seasons mode somewhat like what they have in FIFA. But thus far, you've only really seen it being implemented in Ultimate Team, which I consider kind of a shame.
Sumit Sarkar, you are an NHL guy. What are you looking forward to the most in NHL 15?
Beating the crap out of the Kings with my Rangers. but that, certainly, and also the Doc Emmerich and Eddie Olczyk commentary and the NBC Sports presentation package as a whole. But in particular, you know, I haven't spent a ton of time with EA Sports Hockey League, but I'm certainly looking forward to that as well. But for me, the number one thing is Be a Pro. I've loved Be a Pro for a long, long time. I spent a ton of time with it from like NHL 09 through NHL 13. But I think it's sorely in need of not necessarily an overhaul. I mean, it's a great concept, but it's gotten pretty stagnant, I think, over the years, and I would like to see them do something new with it. You know, I'm not sure you could bring in like the lifestyle stuff that you have with My Career in NBA 2K, but I think, you know, there are certainly some, or I would hope there are certainly some things that EA Canada can do to spice things up with that single player career mode, and that's what I'm looking forward to. That's what I'm hoping for with NHL 15.
Based on the most recent NHL free agency period, I can't wait to have Thomas Vanek skating with Zach Parise and Jason Pominville on what will be your Central Division champion, Minnesota Wild.
Chris Sanner, you have become a new NHL fan, as we were tweeting back and forth during the Stanley Cup Finals. What are you looking forward to the most in NHL 15?
You know, honestly, Rich, I'm just looking forward to playing a better looking and better feeling hockey game. I've been a fan of the NHL series for a long time. I'm not as big into the online mode, so EA, you know, the hockey league. No, I just like playing. I'm an old school guy. I like just sitting down and playing the computer. I don't know what's wrong with me. Apparently, I have a problem. I don't know what that is. It's called being an introvert, I think. But I just am looking forward to playing NHL again and playing it on these new consoles. I can't put my finger on it, but just playing a better looking game that looks more realistic and is probably going to play extremely well is very exciting to me. And I honestly can't wait to figure out how the heck to play hockey better so I can feel smart about this sport. So when the games start back, Rich, I can tweet you and everybody else on the show who apparently loves hockey except for me, and I can feel smart and included and part of the group. I can't wait.
Awesome. Owen Good, what about you?
You know, I am not anywhere near NHL cognoscente. So, you know, things like the overhaul in the broadcast presentation, you know, definitely appeal to me, and I think that they've made a very good move there. But what I saw of NHL, you know, at E3 was a game that has done the most, you know, to like really overhaul itself and make, you know, take advantage of the new architecture and make it all shine. And I'd like to point out this was the sports game of show for E3. You know, that was you know, in the Critics Awards for Best of E3, NHL, you know, came out ahead. That's a category that's usually dominated by FIFA, you know, their cousins across the hall at EA Canada. And I'd like to think that I called that, but I did walk out of that conference room, you know, in May, having seen NHL and going, you know what, these guys are really putting their back into it, you know, to make a different game. And one thing that I will be intrigued to see, and I'm not saying that I observed it to the degree that it's, you know, fundamentally radically altering the game, but they're talking a lot about puck physics. They put a guy who actually worked at the Large Hadron Collider on that, and he wasn't sweeping the floors either. And I will be interested to see those who do know hockey, how they do react to that, because they're, you know, they put a lot of muscle into that, and they decided, you know, this is something that we have to address. You know, we have bad bounces into the corner and all sorts of other problems, so now we want to make the puck behave more truly. I think it's a game that is making an honest and recognizable effort across the board, and you know, I like that tone. About, I like the story of NHL coming in this year, even if I have not been the most attentive person to its features or to the series.
Well, I know, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, Cat Bailey and Sumit Sarkar would not stop raving about NHL, so clearly we know it was their sports game of the show as well. I tell you one, I mean, I know this is going to sound from a new feature standpoint, and I don't think we know a whole lot of the new features, but this is going to sound pretty ordinary, but I am looking forward to the Press Row NHL Online League, maybe more than any other league that we're going to have this fall. I mean, we are playing the Press Row Madden League right now. I mean, we're still going strong in year four. We are having some fun, and we talk about the Dodd Scientifics MLB The Show League. It's more experimental than anything, but we did complete a 30-game regular season with all of its amazingness and weirdness, and we could have an entire show dedicated to the bizarre behavior that happens in an MLB The Show online franchise. But we've played, you know, we've had NHL franchises that Kat and TJ and I have been in the past. And, you know, as TJ mentioned earlier, sometimes it's more fun to have less people in your league than more. And the Press Row League that we're going to have is going to have, I don't know, 6, 8, 10, you know, people that we know that play the game in the way that we all play. And I know, based upon past history, unless this game somehow falls apart between E3 and its release, I am so excited for the league that we're going to have. And we're recruiting Chris Sanner to join us. We're recruiting Brian Weedeye to join us. We're recruiting Sumit Sarkar to join us. We're even recruiting you, Owen Good, to join us in the league and have some fun. So that is what I am looking forward to more than anything else with NHL 15. Well, all right. That has been our show. As always, a lot of fun. I love doing this show with these wonderful people that I get the chance to talk to every couple of weeks. I continue to be humbled and delighted by the incredible amounts of people that listen to the show and download it and support us. Again, as always, thank you to Steve Noah and Chris Sanner from Operation Sports for distributing the show and making it available to so many thousands of people who listen to it. I'm just so excited every time I look at the numbers that the show gets. It's so much fun to be able to do this with all these great people. So thank you. And on behalf of Chris Tanner from Operation Sports, Owen Good from Polygon, Brian Weedeye from Pasta Padre, TJ Lowerman for That Sports Gamer, Sumit Sarkar from Polygon, Kat Bailey from US Gamer, I am Rich Grisham from the Internet. Thank you, as always, for listening, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Please subscribe to this show via iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the Windows app, or just go to Operation Sports every day, and that's where you'll find us as well. Wherever you get it, please make sure that you rate and review it and comment on it, because that helps keep the show going. Also, please be sure to follow the show on Twitter at Press Row Podcast, as well as all of our panelists and supporters, including Operation Sports Chris Sanner at Chris_SNR, Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good, Polygon's Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar, Operation Sports Steve Noah at Steve_OS, Pasta Padre's Brian Weedeye at Pasta Padre, US Gamer's Kat Bailey at The_CatBot, TJ Lowerman at ThatSportsGamer, and me, your host, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham, as well as, of course, Operation Sports at Operation Sports. Again, thank you so much to the great folks at Operation Sports for making the show happen, and especially thank you to our listeners. We really appreciate your support.